Before we commence, let's take a few moments to understand why do we worship the Buddha? What is the purpose? Because every week we spend our time traveling from who knows where to come to the monastery. And when we come here, we start off by chanting Namaskar. Why? This is to remind ourselves that we have a job to do. That each and every one of us has a job. For who? For ourselves. So, throughout my life, I've always thought, you know, the Namaskara, we're praising or worshipping the Buddha. But, no. The Namaskara isn't to praise or worship the Buddha. Instead, it's a pledge. It's an oath that we take for ourselves, saying that I will change myself. I will change myself to the path that the Supreme Buddha had shown to attain my liberation. And just imagine what sort of things his path has done for us already. Just hearing the words of the Buddha, the amount of change that we've seen in ourselves. I don't know about you guys. I can talk about myself. The amount of change that we can see in ourselves. All thanks to who? The Supreme Buddha. So with that, let's take a few moments to worship the infinitely compassionate one, the sublime one, the Supreme Buddha, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times, all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sambuddhassa.
I want to start off with asking you a question. What is the best day? What is the best day? Today? Are you sure? You mean today to be Saturday or today to be today? Saturdays are very good days, right? Because we all spend our time coming to the monastery, waking up in the morning, coming to the monastery, listening to sermons, and using our time to meditate. What is the best day? Although we say today, what do we feel? What is the best day? I'll give you a hint. It's not Monday, not Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, not Saturday, not Sunday. It's more of a concept, or not an actual day, but more of a, you can say, a concept. Normally when we have work to do, yeah, and when it becomes too stressful, what do we say? We'll do it today? Tomorrow. Tomorrow is the best day ever. Why? Because tomorrow hasn't happened yet. Tomorrow we can push everything back tomorrow. What do I mean? Usually we have lots of work to do. There are things that we like to do, because still we have ignorance and attachment, right? So there are things that we like to do, and there are things that we don't like to do. And we've got massive lists of things. And when it becomes, you know, too much, so for example, let's say when you go back home, you see a massive mess. You see the time is like 9 o'clock at night. So what do? We say, tomorrow. Children, when you do your homework, tomorrow. When do you do the work that you must do? Tomorrow. This concept of tomorrow is what helps us live through life. Just imagine we have to do everything today. You have to clean today, you have to cook today, we have to get ready today, you have to do this today, you have to do that today, and you've got lists and lists of things today. But isn't it so much easier to say, I'll do it tomorrow. It's tomorrow. If I asked you, why do we say tomorrow? Whenever we get something, right? When we have something important to do, why do we say tomorrow? Because if you think about it, we do the same thing with our own practice. Today, for dana, you'll get chocolate. Chocolate. Should I? Should I not? I'm going to take it and then practice tomorrow. You know, you're driving in the car. You hear some music. It used to be your favorite song. Do I practice now? No. Don't need to practice now, right? Practice when? Tomorrow. Like, I promise, right? I solemnly swear I'll practice tomorrow. Just think about this. We always use this. We say, we're going to do this tomorrow. This. Say, something comes up in your head and you like it. Say, there's a certain event that, I don't know. Say, you sit down for meditation. Unfortunately, our minds are not under our control. Agree? We sit down for meditation. Our mind wanders. Goes to this, goes to that. Just see if there are some certain things that you think, you know, I'll practice on that tomorrow. Because you think it's either too hard, or you think, I like it. So I'm going to do it tomorrow. I promise I'll do it tomorrow. Are there certain things like that? That, you know, you think, you know what, I'm going to practice it tomorrow. I'm not going to do it today. Because today, I've got other stuff to do. See, we are always... Right, so when does tomorrow happen? Tomorrow. So the next day, when does that tomorrow happen? Tomorrow. And we push and push and push and push. We push it back as far as we possibly can. And when you push too much, well, sometimes there will be no tomorrow in this body. There'll be tomorrow in another body. But we always push back and we say, too stressful tomorrow. I have tests. I've got things to do. I'm going to do those tomorrow. Revise tomorrow. Instead, today, I'm going to do this. Have we laid this this concept of tomorrow, and we use it to relieve our vexation? When the vexation becomes too much, we say, you know, tomorrow. Instead, we don't understand that we are vexing in that moment. That vexation is happening in that moment. Because we have this very easy, like a trump card, tomorrow. So when something becomes too stressful, you come back home, it's all a mess. So for example, let's say a few weeks back, we had massive winds and storms, right? Houses were flooded. Right. Imagine you go back home today, right? I don't think it's supposed to rain today, but who knows? Rain heavily, it will rain, but no, I don't think it's going to rain as heavily with the winds and all that. But if it does, and you come home to see, you know, leaves all over the house, branches, some water all everywhere, and it's like 9, 10, 11. Just see what's happening inside of us. The vexation that we feel builds and builds and builds and builds. Now we know the relief of vexation is what? Pleasure. It's this happiness that we are all sentient beings are craving for. But then we say, you know, I'm too sleepy today, I'm too tired today, I've done so much work today. Tomorrow. Just see if we use this excuse tomorrow. Through this week, I've been looking at myself to see how many times I've said, you know, tomorrow. Whether it's something I have to do, or it's even practicing my path. How many times do I use this excuse tomorrow? That I'm going to do it tomorrow. Because we always push things back. We always push things back so we don't feel the stress. We don't feel the vexation now. Because tomorrow is not going to be you who's doing it, right? Right? It's not going to be you doing the homework tomorrow, is it? It's not going to be you doing the cleaning or the cooking or the work tomorrow. It's who? You know, someone else. But we push back thinking that it's going to relieve or it's not going to be as stressful. So again, see. The best day of the week, the best day is what? Tomorrow. Because we can push things back as much as we possibly want tomorrow. See if you use this excuse of tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do that, you know, tomorrow. Because when the vexation becomes too high, see if you use the excuse of tomorrow. You see, this is a very simple thing. It's not that, you know, you have you're really angry and then you do something, or you feel a massive amount of desire and you do something. No, this is a very small one. But this small one creeps into the corners of our life. It creeps into the corners and it takes away the chance that we have today. Like you all said very correctly, the best day should be what? Should be today. Because we only have this moment. We don't have the name. We can't be sure about tomorrow. We can't be sure about next week. But we do know about today. Just try to realize. Just think. How certain are you that you are going to live for a long life? We are very certain. We are. Because why? We think, you know what, I'm going to be alive tomorrow. That's why we think, okay, we're planning and we say, you know what, I'll practice my path tomorrow. You know, I can spend 3 hours in Valley Molo tomorrow, right? I'm going to have my Guru Homo tomorrow, right? I will meet my teachers tomorrow. I'll do this tomorrow, I'll do this next week. And you build this massive concept of, you know, next month, right? Next month I'll be working. We'll have new recruits, right? Some of us will be ordained. Some of us will become higher ordained. We will all be different. We'll all do this. We'll all do that. And next year I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And we build on this concept that, you know what? I'm going to be alive for how long? 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. 70, 80, 90, 100. Do we realize that, you know, tomorrow may not be a possibility? Like, we all understand that. Right? So, if I said, when are you going to die, right? All of you say, not certain. No. Simon answer, we don't know. Hey, we don't know. But what do you feel? Because the practice is always about this fight against knowledge and feeling. The practice is basically this fight against knowledge and feeling. Because now you have the Dhamma, you have the knowledge. So you know that things are anicca, dukkha, anatta. Right? You know that it's like this. But what do you still feel? Oh, me, fixed, things, mine. So it's always a battle between knowledge and feeling. So what do you really feel? Do you feel that, you know, tomorrow I'm not sure? Or do you still feel that, you know, tomorrow I'm going to wake up tomorrow? You still feel that, don't you? You still feel that, you know, I will still be awake tomorrow. See, I can't remember exactly who told me this or from what speech that is in this form, but it was to live like a dying man. That today is your last day. So actually, if you think about it, it's very hard to think that, you know what, I'm only going to live a moment at a time. Just try to get your mind to come to that point. I'm only living a moment at a time. Well, thanks to ignorance and attachment, thanks to jati, we can't do that. We always have this feeling that, no, for this next hour, next 2 hours, next 3 hours, next day, next week, I will be alive. But are we certain? How are we certain? We can't guarantee it. But yet, our mind works in such ways. Now, it's not saying that you shouldn't plan. So, if you guys have, if you all have plans, if you all have timetables and, you know, weekly timetables, monthly timetables, yearly timetables, who knows. If you do, then it's not saying these are wrong. But these things can make us feel that we are immortal. Because that's what we feel. We feel as though we're immortal. Now, if I was to look at my grandparents, they will always tell me, you know, back when I was late, right? They'll say, puta, yeah, I'm very old now. Who knows when I'm going to kick the bucket? I'm just really old and all this. But then if I asked her, Archie, like, I saw there's a new flower blooming, right? You planted a new, me, my flowers don't match. Give me a name of flower. Huh? Do roses grow in Sri Lanka? Yeah? Yes, okay. Roses. Archie, I saw you plant some roses. And he says, yeah, Buddha. They'll be growing and they'll be so beautiful next month. So she knows, she tells me that she doesn't know when she's going to pass away. But she's expecting to see what? The roses bloom. How does that work? She doesn't know when she's going to pass away, but she still expects, you know, I'm going to see roses to bloom. We work the same way, don't we? We say, you know, I don't know when something's going to happen. Who knows if I exit the room, I'll still be alive. We say that. But what do we feel? You know, after Guruhandra Sam, I'll go back home, and then after go home. You know, I think we have some leftovers in the fridge. We'll have some leftovers. No. Again, you need to plan, right? I'm not saying this, you shouldn't plan, right? I'm talking about the feeling here, right? This feeling that I'm going to be doing this, I'm going to be doing that. So you expect to be alive until you have the leftovers in the fridge. And then you'll be like, but I'll wake up now, okay. But then, okay, tomorrow is a Sunday, so on Sunday I have to wake up, and then I'm going to skip breakfast because, you know, I'm going to sleep a bit in because it's going to be late today. I'm going to skip breakfast and come to the monastery tomorrow really early, and I have Guru Hamra. When I go to the Guru Hamra, I'm going to be talking about this and this and this and this. Now, again, planning is good. Right? Don't get into your head, planning is bad. I'm going to reinforce, planning is good. Planning is good. Planning is good. Right? So I'm not going to, I don't want any of you to go to your teachers and say, you know, yesterday, on Saturday, we listened to a sermon and we understood. So planning, timetables, they are just reinforcing that I'm immortal. No. Again, planning is good. Timetables are good. But I'm asking you, what do you feel? What do you feel? Because this is what we have to attack. This is what we have to attack. Do we feel that we will be alive for the next week? Be alive next month? And on the other hand, this is not for you to be very gloomy and say, oh, you know, who knows when I'm going to die? I don't know. So someone says, so your relatives come and tell you, uncle, auntie, RGC, whoever, right? Would you be able to come come to this event? Right? You don't go and say, oh puta, who knows if I'll be alive until that next event. Right? This is not for you to be gloomy or to be sad. I'm just showing you how you should really live or try to live. By having this idea that I don't know. Because if you think about this, it's because you know that you will wake up tomorrow. Do you wear that patkada like normal? You know, the praying mat you have on your shoulders? It's because you are certain you'll wake up tomorrow that you just feel that me putting this on is just normal. Right? Because it's not normal. Not normal in two aspects, because it's not something you normally do, but not normal because what happens if today is your last day? As a monk, as an anagarika, sila shravakas, sila huasis. If it's your last time, imagine you are certain that, you know, today is your last day. How would you have worn your uniform? Would you like rush it and go like, oh yeah, again, today as well, let's wear this. Is that how you would wear it? If you know today was your last day, you'll wear it with such pride. Knowing you're wearing it, knowing that today I am going to practice the path. Today I am a disciple of the Buddha. And you wear it with great pride. Because why? Today's your last day. Because most of you pretty much live in the monastery, right? Just because you leave the monastery at night doesn't mean you're not living it. You live at that monastery. You spend most of your time at the monastery. You get to see monks. You get to offer dana. You get to do all this. But if today's your last day, how would you do it? If today's your last day, how would you do it? You'll do it with the utmost respect. You'll do it with the utmost, with the greatest amount of merits you can possibly accumulate. Because why? Today's your last time giving dana. This is what it means to live like a dying person. That today is your last day. So today will be the last day you listen to Guru Har Das sermon. Now you tell me, how will you listen to it? You tell me, when you become tired, what do you do? You tell me, when your mind starts to wander, what do you do? If today is the last day you listen to Guru Har Das sermon, knowing that, you know, after this day, who knows where I'd be. If according to my merits, I may be in the heavens, if according to my merits, maybe I'll be in the woeful plains, the blissful, the woeful, the human. Forget rebirth. Today is the last day you'll listen to Guru Har Das sermon. The last day you'll be able to listen to a sermon that can help you attain Nibbana. How will you listen to it? How would you listen to it? You see, today's the last day of the Veli Malur, your very last day at the Veli Malur. From today will be the last hour that you're going to spend in that place where you sit down or you're walking or doing some sort of meditation. It's the last day. After this, you will not have the opportunity. How would you spend your time? Because it's like this, right? I was thinking. So sometimes when you have to do something, it becomes a burden. Right? So for example, you have to... Say you are given the responsibility of looking after, say, this pen. This is your responsibility. Your responsibility is to look after this pen. Right? Now, the first day you get it, then you go, okay, I'm responsible. You clean it and you keep preserve it on this. And every Sunday you come, every Saturday you come, you leave it and you leave it here. Right, and you got the responsibility. After some time, you lose its value. You think, I'm doing this every week. Do you want to try? I've been doing it for some. I've been doing it for a couple of weeks now, and do you want to do some as well? Because now it becomes a bit boring, right? Every week you're doing the same thing. But if this was a choice, looking after this was a choice, now what? Let me give you a more relatable idea, right? So every so often, right? Every day, actually, for most of us, we have these... doctrine sermons. Yeah. So for some of us, we have to wake up at 4:30, right, in the morning. Well, technically, we wake up at 4 and be in the Dhamma hall by 4:30 to join these doctrine sermons. And because it's something that we are doing, and if we feel that we have to do it, sometimes it feels like a burden. You go like, today as well? Really? Okay, fine. But if it was a choice, you can choose whether you can go, whether you go or not. Now what? Now you would take this, you would do this to the maximum. So again, same thing. If this today was your last doctoring sermon, how would you do the sermon and how would you listen? If today is your last one, never again, never ever again will you get another chance. Today is your last day associating these noble people around you. How would you associate them? Now one of them go and say, now would you go and talk to one of your noble companions and say, yesterday I went and I brought this, I did this, I did this. Or would you spend those valuable hours, seconds, minutes, discussing, yesterday my teacher said something like this. What do you think? See, the Buddha himself has said there are 32 topics, right? Yeah, 32 topics for us to refrain from talking about. Dedhiskata, right? And these topics range from talking about kings and queens and parliaments and food and places and all this. Why? Why would he say don't talk about these? Again, he's not saying don't talk about these things. He says refrain from. Again, it's not don't, refrain from. Why? Because what's the point? You are spending your valuable time. You are spending the last couple seconds, minutes, hours of your time discussing about, say, yesterday I had some chocolate cake. It was delicious. Oh, you guys don't talk about chocolate cake, do you? What do you guys talk about? Yesterday I saw so-and-so do this. I saw, she did this, he did that. You know, and it's a very common thing, right? Just to talk amongst ourselves on things that are very irrelevant. Because why? We have forever. We have until not even 80. We have until forever. So, live like a dying man. Live like a dying person. Today is your last time, last day. If you have no other day apart from this, how would you live? Just think of it. Think of it like this. When your head, when you fall asleep today, that's it. That's the end. Now spend the day like that. So for example, let's say we all have a bedtime at, say, 10. Example, right? Say we all have to be, we all fall asleep at 10. 10 will be the last time you'll be awake. You'll be alive. Now you tell me, how will you spend your time? So it's not me telling you, you know what, spend your time thinking, you know what, I'm gonna die. No. This is not it. This is you utilizing your time, the time that you have. Because if this is your last day of life, how are you going to spend your time? How are you going to meditate? How are you going to contemplate? How are you going to spend all your great, valuable time doing something? Doing something that's valuable. Check. Coming back to something you talked about last week, am I doing the maximum? I'm telling you this to motivate you to do more. Whatever you're doing, do that plus more. And then some. So contemplate and then some. Listen to the Dhamma and then some. Use every second of your valuable time because it's very limited. Because why? Day at 10 o'clock. When you fall asleep. That's it. Now don't worry. No one's going to come and wait for you to fall asleep, right? And end your life. Don't worry. Nothing like that's going to happen. But think of it like this. Use it like that. Use that to motivate you. So I hope all of you have done your homework. No? Yes? No? You can raise your imaginary hands if you haven't done the homework. So those of you who may not be in here, or may have forgotten, right, it can happen, I understand. I had given everyone a task to do. And that was to write three things that... So we last time we talked about what more we can do for our own liberation. And I asked you to write three things that you're going to do. Three things, wasn't it? Yes, three things. Now, because I'm nice, right? If you haven't done it, I'm going to give you some time to actually write something down. Right? Trust me, I won't look if you're writing or not, right? But I would actually give you some time because this I feel is to be pretty important. Those of you who have written something down, I want you to look at these three. Right, these three things. Right. And I want you to see how much of these three things did you try to do this week? How much of these three things have you tried to do this week? So, if it was to say, you try to contemplate about, say, Aramaitri, while Noble Metta, while walking from the gate to the hall. How many times do you do that this week? if it was every time I pass a Buddha statue, I will put my hands together and worship. How many times did you do this week? I want you to really think about this. Because this is what I'm talking about. No one, no other liberation but your own. If we're talking about my liberation, trust me, I wouldn't care if you guys had written anything or not. Because why? I would do it. It's like this, right? If you were trapped somewhere, you are trapped in a maze, and this maze is full of different traps. And let's say this maze changes as well, so you can't memorize where you're supposed to go. There are traps, there are animals, there are many things that can hurt you, kill you, and do various damage. How determined would you be to escape? So there's nowhere that's safe. You'll be pretty determined. If anyone said, "I think I saw an exit here," you would not think twice before following them. If someone gives you a clue and says, "Look, the exit, if you follow these blue flowers, you get to the exit," you will follow those blue flowers until you get to the exit. Because you know that I'm in pain at this moment. Right? Either I'm in pain or I will be in pain. Because why? Either something has already gotten me, or something will get me. In other words, either you are suffering, or you will. Suffering meaning, either you'll get what you want, or you won't get what you want. But no matter what, you have something. You're still in the maze. You're still either suffering or you will be suffering. So what we have to do is spend our time to get out. Another great example, I think one of my teachers had given me long before. It was, imagine you have a house in a forest. Right? Animals come in. So what do? You need to shoo them away. Right? When it rains, it floods. So you have to clean and you have to look after. Sometimes, flowers fall into the house and it makes it smell very good. Sometimes. But no matter what, you are constantly in fear of things coming into this house. So what should you do? You are constantly protecting the house. What should you do? Build high walls, right? Build massive forts and guard this house, right? No. If you had no house, would you have anything to look after? So imagine someone come up to you and say, imagine you are protecting every single moment of your life. You're protecting this so-called house. If a bird comes in, you're ready with a broom to hit it away, right? If a snake comes in, you still use your broom to broom it away. If tigers, leopards, animals from all over come in, whether venomous or not, they come in and you have to protect your house, you have to chew them away. Imagine someone comes up to you and says, "Why? Why are you protecting this house? Isn't it better just to remove it?" And you realize, "Huh, yeah, that's true. Why am I protecting this? Yeah, I'm not sleeping in it. It's not giving me anything. Instead, it's just something that I'm here to protect." Then the person says, "Why don't you dismantle it?" Now you know that you're supposed to dismantle it. What are you going to do? Bring out the tools and you're going to break it apart, right? Break the door, break the window, break the roof, break the walls, break everything. When animals come in, what do you do? What do you do? When animals come in, what do you do? still, you'll be breaking the walls, breaking the door, breaking the roof, breaking the... Why? Because you know the animals only come in for as long as you have the house. It's flooded. The house is flooded. What should you do? Break the walls, break the door, break the roof. Because you know it's flooded because there's a house. No, nothing's coming in. No floods, no animals, nothing. It's perfectly fine. What would you do? Still. Break the walls, break the door, break the windows. You'll still be attacking and breaking down this house. Not let, even though something happens or something doesn't happen. You have a job. Now come back to your own path. You all know that you are suffering due to what? Due to what? The process of what? Jati. The process of jati is what's causing all of this. So what should you do? Whether you have a happy jati, right, a pleasant jati, or not pleasant jati, or it's just neutral, what should you do? You should break down the house. Now look at these three things that you've written down, hopefully. Right? Look at these three things that, you know, you want to try to do to further accelerate your practice. Now, see how, if these three things are possible. Because I know, right, we have this tendency to think that I can do everything. I can, you know, I'm going to spend every waking hour to practice my path. Right? And it's possible. I'm not saying it's not possible. But can you do it? At this moment, next week, can you? So look at these three things and see, can I do these three things? Or how can I lower it down? How can I reduce its intensity? How can I reduce its intensity so I can get it done today? Or in this week? Because we are trying to do the maximum we possibly can. You see, the more you try, the more you will find. So the more you start thinking about, what more can I do? And the more you start changing, the more you will find. You will find the nook and crannies in all of your time that you can spend doing more. You know you can spend doing more. So look at these three things and see how can I start to implement this? How can I do it now? How can I do it in this day, in this week? So some of these three things will be something that you can do daily. I want you to come up and think about. I want you to come up with and think about what can trigger this. Because remember, habits always have a trigger. Something that we talked about, I think, a couple of weeks back now. For a habit to happen, there always has to be something to trigger it. Whether it's a sight, whether it's a sound, whether it's a person, whether it's something. What will that trigger be? For example, if you say, you know what, I'm going to practice... I want to do some more contemplation about food, because I still feel that food is delicious, is tasty. So you now need a trigger. What will your trigger be? You can say the trigger will be when I sit down with, for example, today we have Once you have served yourself, next what do? You wait for the monks to come around, to offer them a portion of your meal, right? How long do you wait? How long do you wait? 5-10 minutes? How long? I don't know. How long do you wait? How long? Huh? 10 minutes. You can say it today. From the moment I have the meal in my hand to the moment I serve the monk. Well, serve the monk and you wait for them to leave as well, right? We have seen this. Right? You have some time. Use that 10 minutes to contemplate about what? About why. Why am I taking this food, or why do I feel that this is going to be delicious, or why do I feel that taste is going to come from this? Again, use it as a trigger. Have something to trigger this habit, this new habit that you want. Let's say another one would be, I want to practice seeing good virtues in other people. What can we have to trigger this? Unfortunately, due to ignorance and attachment, there are certain people that we like and certain people that we don't like. Fair, right? I'm not saying something that you guys don't have. Due to ignorance and attachment, we have separated people that we like and people that we don't like. Use this as something to help you trigger this habit. So whenever you meet someone, or whenever you see someone that you don't like, try to look for their good qualities. Now you have no excuse. Now there is a trigger that's triggering this habit. Now you are doing something, so this habit, or so one of these three things is happening. So look at these three things and put a trigger next to it. Something that will trigger. It could be an event, it could be a time, it could be a person, it could be a place. For example, every time you come into this room, before the event starts, right? Whether it's a sermon, whether it's discussions, whether it's whatever. Think about it and say that when I'm in this room before the event starts, I'm going to do this. And place the so-called habit inside. Because that's how habits work. See, we're using the mechanics of habits to help us practice our path. To help us practice the path. So, I'll give you some time. If you have those three things with you now, next to it, write the trigger. What do you want to trigger it? What should the trigger be? And use that. Because the path is always practical. The practicing of the path is always practical. No matter how much theory we understand, it's the practical application that helps us achieve the path. It's like trying to walk in the dark. The Dhamma is the torch. But to get to where you want, you have to walk. Use your own two legs to walk. Anyone can give you a torch. It could be a bright torch, it could just be a small matchbox. It doesn't matter. You have some sort of light. Now walk. The walking is the practical application. That's why you have the Dhamma and then you have the Pratipada. The Dhamma and the practice. The Dhamma is the light, but the practice is the actual walking. You can have, like, what do you call those? A massive beam. Like, you know, there's beacon-like torches. Yeah, laser beams. You can have a massive laser beam that can shoot kilometers far. But what's the point if you don't start walking? So this is why. Yes, the Dhamma, you need the Dhamma. But you also, just like you need a torch, you also need your two legs to walk. So again, use what you know and put into practice. Okay. So today we talked about two things, right? Number one, to live like a dying person. And number two, to use triggers to trigger this, right? Now I want to move on to the Dhamma. I've taught you how to walk, right? For now. Now I want to give you the light to show you where you want to walk. Okay. I first want to talk about how do we train? How do we train an animal? If you've had, say, not just animals, I mean even humans themselves, how do we train them to do things? How do we do it? Whenever they do something good, we give them a treat. So this is called reinforcement. Right? Whenever, so for example, this is very useful to know because you realize that this is very useful and you use this. But let's say a child has done something that is praiseworthy. If you praise the child, what would the child do? Repeat the action. Simply, right? So for example, if you like a person to do a certain activity. I don't know what the activity. If you think about this, this is how we've learned as well. So, for example, they learning that whenever you meet someone to say Teruvan Sayana at the monastery, how did that happen? You saw it. You did it, and you felt good. Therefore, you continue to repeat it. So whenever you meet someone, now it becomes, it's a habit that you can't stop. Well, for me as well. Right. So normally, I'll be with our monks, and so I'll be like, Tiruvan Sayana behind me. Sometimes when I meet someone, I say, a stranger, sometimes it comes up and says, Tiruvan Sayana behind me. No, not behind me. Sorry. Because it's a habit, right? Because every time we do it, we are reinforced. So a behavior can be reinforced when we come across a positive reinforcement. And that's how we train dogs, cats, children, adults, whatnot. Now, if I asked you, Why are we so attached to pleasure? Why is pleasure such a strong grip on our, has a strong grip on our lives? It's the same thing. We have been reinforced that these sort of things are what gives us pleasure. So if I was to give examples, So this is an experiment that a psychologist, his name is B.F. Skinner, you may or may not have heard of him. He had this idea that you can train any human to become anyone. Right? He says, give me 5 babies and I can make one of them into a doctor, one of them into a thief, one of them into whoever. And the way he proves this is that he has an animal, right? And he puts them into a cage, right, you know, in a box. It's called the Skinner box. And in this box, there's a lever. Right? This either mouse, pigeon, or whatever. When they're in this box, they go around and they pull this lever accidentally. When they pull the lever, they are rewarded. A box opens and a treat falls out. Now what happens? Now they think, now this rat or this mouse, pigeon, this animal thinks what? Why did this happen? Because I pulled this lever. So what does it do again? Pulls lever. Pulls lever. Pulls lever. Every time it pulls lever, pellets, food pellets pop up. Now it makes the connection that lever equals food. Lever equals happiness. So by even pulling this lever, this mouse, this rat, is what? Happy. You see, this is the same thing that happens to each and every one of us. Except this is what happens with pleasure. So we all know that, you know, we all know from now, right, we all know that vexation, we all have vexation. When vexation is relieved, what happens? We have pleasure. That's a completely different system. A completely different process. We have vexation, right? Vexation increases. The vexation decreases. The decrease of vexation is what we feel to be pleasure. Or it's almost like you can almost say it's like the mind relaxes. Right? The mind is pressurized and the mind relaxes. Now, the thing is, when the mind relaxes, it tries to think, what did I do to deserve this? What has happened for me to deserve this relaxed feeling? And it looks back and makes the connection. Ah, it's because I ate this. Now it realizes that this is what gave me this relief. And now it will continuously look after, go after what? Just like the rat pulls down his lever. Now, you can say, yes, the rat pulled down the lever, right? And there's a mechanism that connects the lever to the box, right? And therefore, there's a connection. Except, there was another experiment done, and it's called, if I remember correctly, superstition in the pigeon. Where a pigeon is in this box, there's no buttons, no levers, nothing. But there's a timer. Every 20 seconds, the box opens. And the pellet falls out. And it closes. What do you think the pigeon does? So every 20 seconds, this box opens, a pellet falls out, and they receive that treat. So it's reinforced what? Whatever action they were doing when the door opened. For example, if this bird was flapping its wings, right, when the box opened, what will the bird continuously do? flap its wings. It will continue to flap its wings because it thinks that this is what's given me what? The food. Just like, and the flapping the wings and the opening the box are not connected in any sort of way. They are two completely different processes. One of them is connected with a timer, and the other one is just the pigeon. Even though they're not connected in any sort of way, the pigeon thinks that they are connected. Just like, you know, when we are in the elevator, or we're calling the elevator and we press the button. Have you not seen children? They press the button once. When I say children, I mean it could happen to anyone, right? Not just children. You press the button once, and again, and again, and again, and again. And the last one you press, the door opens. We think what? That it's because I pressed this button that the door opened. And you realize that I opened the door. But are those two things connected? Was it the last press that called the elevator? No. But yeah, we make this connection thinking that I did this. We made this connection with pleasure and we say, this is what brought me pleasure. So I want this. I want this with me. I want this. If vexation was to be relieved while you saw anything, you instantly make an attachment to it, make a connection with it. And when I mean anything, it could be absolutely anything. For example, So today I have a red pen with me, and I don't have a red marker pen. Right? I got a red pen. No. Let's say we don't like the color red. Or we have this. Say we don't like red. But let's say you go completely blind. Or let's say we remove the color red from this. Because when you go colorblind, the red of this goes, right? Right? When you're colorblind, this red goes, right? I mean, the red in this disappears. So when you go colorblind, we all go colorblind, right? No. You lose the sense of, you lose the perception of color. So, again, say you can't see color. Right? You don't like the color red, and you lose the perception of the color red. Or you lose the perception of all colors. But then, a doctor comes up, and they cure your color blindness. And the first color you see is what? Red. Would you be like, doctor, please take away my color, my perception of color. Make me colorblind again. Would you? No, instead you'll be so happy. And you automatically made the connection that it's the color red. Color red is what makes me happy as well. From that day onwards, you no longer hate the color red. Instead, that's a color that you like now. Because the pleasure and the activity, they aren't actually connected. They're two different processes. The process of sight, or the process of perceiving, and the process of pleasure are two different things. But we make this connection and we say, this is what it is. I like this. Right? This brings me pleasure. Whether it's chocolate cake, whether it's a person, whether it's a thing, whether it's anything. We make that connection saying that this is what brings me pleasure. So I think we have a video. Yes? No? Yes, we have a video. So this is the video of the superstition in the pigeon, right? Do we have it with audio or without audio? With audio? Okay. So this is an actual experiment that you've done. So I wanted to show you this so I can re-emphasize this point. Can we have the video? Can we pause? Pause. Okay, can we go back a bit? Can we pause and go back? Alright, so can we go back a bit more? Alright, so this is the first thing I talked about. That this is a button. When the pigeon presses the button, it opens. So there is a connection between the button and the opening. I agree. So when the pigeon hits the button, it opens, and it thinks that this button is what gives me food. Right? So it thinks that I am controlling this process. I am controlling the process. So whenever I hit the button, I get happiness. I get food. Right? So there is a connection between the action and the event. But, carry on. Can we cut the audio? So, alright, so the second time, now there's no button, no lever, nothing. All there is a timer. Every 20 seconds, the door opens. If the bird was bobbing its head, it will continue to bob its head thinking that it's the bobbing of the head that gives me pleasure. Or it's giving me this food. So it continues to bob its head. Or if it's flapping its wings, it will continuously flap its wings until it opens again. And every time it opens, it thinks, yes, it was because I was flapping my wings did I get this food. Therefore, keeps flapping. So something that we realize in the practice of our path is that we still feel pleasure. Right? Still, pleasure is something that arises in the mind. Why? Because of this pressure, because of the relief. Right? The more the pressure, the more the relief. And we think that I like that. When the mind is aware, we realize that the mind is now vexing, the mind's under vexation, and now it's relieved. But when it's not aware, we just feel the what? The relief. So what we have to do is, there's two different processes here. We have the process of what? What process? What are the two processes? Okay, let's call it the perceiving process for now. Right? The perceiving process. And then also, what else do we have? The ignorance process, or we'll call it for now. You can't say pleasure process or VPP as well. Can't do that. So what we have to understand is that, number one, what is the perceiving process? I think last time we talked about, where does perceiving start? Yes? No? Do you want to talk about that? Sure. I remember something about that. Alright. Where does perceiving start? Where does it start? When you see this, where does perceiving start? When? You guys have to be loud, it's raining. Say loud. Say. When? Alright, one at a time. I gone. One person. When does perceiving start? Alright, so if I held this up, when does the perceiving start? Where does it start? We say it starts where? Here, right? We say it starts when the light enters our eyes, right? And that message is sent to the base, the mind formating base, and then the mind rises. Agree? So it's almost like water. So when a drop hits the water, it ripples. So when the light hits this, hits your eyes, it hits the water. It's like it hits the water and it ripples, and a mind is formed. Is that how it works? Is that how it works? Then? What we have to remember is, the mind is what? The mind is an energy. Luckily, thanks to science, we know energy cannot be created nor destroyed. So if energy cannot be created nor destroyed, where does perceiving start? Or where does this process of the mind start? Now you can say we can separate them. We can say, okay, this is the moment it starts. We can say that. We can pin this point and say this is when the mind starts. But when you really look at it, when does the process of the mind actually start? You can't say. Because, okay, light hits this pen, goes into the eye, right? Goes and hits the retina. Retina picks up its signals, sends it to the brain. Brain sends it to the mind. It hits the mind formation base, and the mind arises. So the mind arises due to what? This. Then, from the light hitting this. Then. Okay, the light. Okay, where did light come from then? So light came from the wires. So did the perceiving process come from the wires? Did the perceiving process come from the CEB, the electrical board? Did it come from, let's say we're being eco-friendly, let's say that it's a hydropower plant, right? Did it come from the generator? Did they come from the turbine? Did they come from the water? So did your mind come from water? Water comes from the sea. Did your mind come from the sea? So when did the process of... when did the process of the mind start? Or at what point did it start? The mind itself is what? Energy. The mind itself is what? A process here. But yeah, we feel that the mind is so separate from this. That the mind and this are two completely separate things. Because why? The mind feels, it doesn't have a form. This has a form. Well, we'll come back to this point in a bit. But when you really think about it, okay, what is a human? What is a human? a body and mind. My question is, do you see it as a body and mind? Don't we see more than that? Because when we say a mind, when we say a mind itself, the feeling that I get is that it's something with the person. It's something that is continuously with the person. That we don't see it to be separate minds, except we see it as one continuous mind. So, if I say we have a person, we say that this is a person's mind. We have a mind, we have a body. And so this is the person's body, this is the person's mind, and we automatically say that this is who they are. But when you really think about it, what is a mind? A mind isn't something that's continuous. Instead, it's discrete, meaning it happens one chunk at a time. But yet, you feel that when you see a person, you think that their mind is continuous. You think that your mind is continuous. You think that, you know, me seeing and me hearing happen in the same what? Mind. You feel that, don't you? I remember I used to think that the mind used to be like a chunk, right? Like the brain, where everything goes on in the mind. Because when you hear that, you know, there's a brain and there's a mind, you realize that, okay, that means the brain is different from the mind, and the mind is a massive chunk of something, and everything is processed in the mind, and it's one thing that's there since it's taking all the information, it's perceiving, and all this stuff. But the mind is what? Not a continuous something. Instead, it's an energy, it's a process. A process of what? At that moment, when the stimuli enters this mental base, a mind arises. Now, when we say a mind arises, most of us can feel that it's something comes up. That something comes up and comes down. That something comes into being and then disappears. That the mind has some sort of form. There is some sort of shape, some sort of, it comes in, it feels as though something comes into existence. But really, what is the mind? The mind is a process that just does what? Perceives. So is it something that comes out of the blue? No. Instead, it's something that arises. Now, when it says arises, it's not something that comes from anywhere. Instead, it's something that, it's a process that happens. And once it happens, the output is what we call perceiving. It's not something, see, it's very hard to put into words, isn't it? It's not something. It's not something. It's not something that has a form or it has some sort of shape. Instead, it's what? Just perceiving. Just an energy that comes out and gives an output of what? Perceiving. That the mind is just what? Perceiving. It's a perceiving process. One perception, so one mind, and the other mind. Are they connected? Yes, they are. Oh, can you guys see this? No, you can't see this, can you? Let's draw this up here. Are two minds connected? Yeah, see? They're connected, aren't they? So, how would you define chitta and the mind then? What would you say the difference between? So, this is a chitta. Chitta meaning this is one thought, one mental perception, you can say. Yeah, mental formation. Now, this is one chitta. One chitta, other chitta. You can say, look, it's connected, right? And say that I've had these chittas, and these chittas are something that I have with me. And we bunch them all together and say, this is what the mind is. But when you really think about it, yes, they're a connection because there's a mental base. Like one chitta will affect the other. Can only affect the other. But doesn't have a direct impact. So when we say it's connected, it's not really connected, but nor is it not connected. This is when, you know, you think, we have lots of this in Buddhism, you know, it's this, but not this as well. So this is a pen, but not a pen as well. Yeah, lots of this stuff. But two minds are like this. But yeah, we really feel that this mind is what is there. That this is my mind. But really what is happening is you only have one mind at this one, or one chitta at this one moment. You only have one chitta at one moment, but yet you still feel that, no, there's lots. So when the mind is seeing, or when the mind is perceiving sight, or a sight, or a rupa-rupa, it's only doing what? But yet you feel that I'm seeing and hearing at the same time. You're seeing me and hearing me at the same time. Can you see someone to be a mind? Can you see someone to be a mind and body? Can you see someone to be a mind and body? No, you cannot. Someone can't be a mind and body. Because you've already said what? They are what? There's an entity there. So when you look at someone, when you look around, what can you just see? Okay. Can you tell me that I have a mind? Can you tell me that I have a mind? So I don't have a mind. Is that what you're trying to say here?
You should have one if you're alive.
But how do you know? But okay, I'm alive, but so are trees. Because you can't see minds, can you? We see movement, we see that the person is so-called alive, and we say that then they have to have a mind. But you have no sensory organ that can sense minds. That's why, you know, like these days, because while talking to lots of people, they have told me that, you know, these days there's a massive craze using AI and all this stuff, and there are chatbots where you can chat and you can literally feel that there's a person on the other end. I know if you've used it, you would come to the same realization. It feels as though there's someone on the other end, another person on the other end. And the other day, some person came up to me and said, "Sorry, Nansa, you know, I have a massive issue." And I said, "What?" "I have, there's this this chatbot. I have fallen in love with this chatbot. Meaning that this person has created a relationship with an artificial what? Process. Literally, and so he told me that okay, he spends 8 hours a day tapping away. Now you can say, what? Really? 8 hours a day tapping away has fallen in love with an AI, a computer? That can't be. Literally, he had a massive issue. The issue was that his parents won't pay for him to get more than 8 hours. So the chatbot only allows 8 hours maximum. He's asked his parents, can I get $14 or something to get more time? And his parents are like, no. And that's why he came. Not that he saw it as an issue. Unfortunately, I think this is what it is. Because we can only perceive. You don't know that this has a mind, but you can think that it does. Just like that person using the texts, using these answers that he's been given, think that there's a person on the other end. I like that person. Because if you realize that there was just zeros and ones that's going on, if he was to realize that this is just zeros and ones that are popping up on screen, do you think he would still fall in love with his AI? No, but he feels that, no, there's an entity there. Coming back, you don't know that this has a mind, but you know that you have a mind. Agree? That's how you perceive. But let's say you can sense that this has a mind. That this has a mind, right? Still, don't you feel that this mind is continuous? For example, we've been having this discussion for over an hour and a bit. It's the same mind that's talking to you, right? Same mind that's talking to you, right? Again, feeling and knowledge, conflict. Knowledge-wise, you know that, that can't be. But feeling, yes. I've been sat here for way too long, right? I've been sat here way too long listening to the sarnas just ramble on about how minds work and whatnot. It's too long. Or you feel that this is something that's constant. But is it? Is it something that's constant? Can you see a person to be just a chitta? Because once you realize that a person is just a chitta, you feel that... Because this is when you start feeling compassion. They do something wrong. But what are they? A chitta. Not even chittas. A chitta. Because why? This moment, the mind arises. This moment, the chitta passes away. Again, when I say the chitta arises, chitta passes away, don't get the feeling that it's something that comes and goes. Instead, it's just the energy of perceiving. When the causes are there, it perceives it. When the causes aren't there, it no longer does. Once you really realize that it's just one chitta at a time, now the world that you perceive changes. Because now you don't see people. Instead, now you see what? Just chittas. A chitta. A chitta arises, a chitta passes away. They say something, they do something. No. Not they say something, they do something. Now what? A chitta arises, a chitta passes away. Someone that I respected so much, they did something stupid. They did something horrific. Is that what happened? A chitta arises, a chitta passes away. Because a person is just... what? A chitta. Because when the mind arises, when the mind passes away, when your mind arises and your mind passes away, you perceive what? A person. Thanks to who? Thanks to ignorance and attachments. You perceive a person, you think, this person has done something. Just leave ignorance in there for now. try to understand that a person is just what? Just a chitta. A chitta at just this moment. Not tomorrow, not the day after, just this moment. Because that's all there is. So, if I was to connect it to what we talked about with the Pratipada part, all you have is what? Just this chitta. This chitta arises, chitta passes away. So when we talk about person, we're not talking about people here. Instead, we're talking about just one chitta. So when a person is seeing, what are they doing? The chitta, the sight, perception, perceiving chitta arises and passes away. Because there's only six things that we can do. As perceiving, what? Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thoughts, manadham. Is there any more we can do? There's only these six things that we can do. So, when we say that a person has done this, a person has done that, no, the person is only what? One chitta that came up with a perception. So, this is something that that once you really realize it's just one chitta, that your entire world starts to change. Because now, through the brain, say it's so. For example, the eye and sight, eye and object comes. So again, it's not an eye and object, just eye and object, right? But the process of seeing happens. It goes into the mind, and the mind arises and passes away. Purpose of the mind is what? What's the purpose of the mind? To perceive. So, for example, we have a flower, right? The mind's purpose is to what? Perceive. However, it arose due to what? It arose due to the sight. But we feel it's the complete opposite. We feel that comes around here. That the mind arises, therefore we see. Or not that it is the sight that gives rise to the chitta. Instead, the chitta gives rise to the sight. Does that make sense? We think that the mind arises, and therefore we are seeing this. The mind arises and therefore we're seeing this. Instead, what is actually happening? So, it's like the chitta first starts, and at some point, the chitta looks at this. But what's really happening here? The chitta starts because of what? It's like, when it comes to like really young children, like say toddlers, sometimes a toddler gets really angry and says, "You know what, Amma Tata, I don't like you, don't want you, huh? I don't want you to be my Amma Tata anymore." That's very silly, isn't it? Because why? Without Amma Tata, without the mother and father, where would the child be? But yet the child feels that no, I came, and then it was mom and dad. But really what happened? It was because of mom and dad did the child come. It was because of the sight did the mind arise. Not that the mind arose and then saw. Sight happened and then the mind I'm giving the wrong idea, because that is the mind. Sight, or the perception of sight, is the mind. Is it confusing? No? Does anyone have any questions on this before we move on? No? Okay. Now, if it is just one mind at a time, say I really wanted to eat pizza. I really want to eat pizza. The mind only arises when something triggers it, when one of the six things triggers it. When the mind wants pizza, which mind eats the pizza? Let's say I want to eat pizza. And then, let's say, stuff in the very back. The very back person, right, I want to eat pizza. The very back person goes and starts walking. The other one orders it. The other one, another person, brings it home. The other one cuts it. The next one picks it up. The other one eats it. The other one swallows. Will I ever be happy? But I'm the one who wanted pizza. But that person's the one who ate the pizza. Will I ever be happy? Will the person who bought the pizza be happy? Will the person who cut the pizza be happy? Now here's the very interesting part. Will the person who ate the pizza be happy? Will they? Why not? Because they don't want to eat it. But once they ate it, did they think, I want it now? Now what? It wants and then passes away. So I go out my way and this mind comes up and thinks, you know what, I want pizza. The mind arises, the mind passes away. Now someone else goes and walks, right? It starts to walk, the mind arises, the mind passes away. The next person goes and orders. After they order, do they want pizza? Think of it like that. After they order, is they want pizza. The mind arises, the mind passes away. The next person goes and takes the pizza. After they pick up the pizza, do they want the pizza? The mind arises, the mind passes away. But then the person who eats it, they eat it, and then they want it. The mind arises, the mind passes away. Will that mind ever be happy? When will your mind actually be satisfied? When will it be satisfied? Okay, I want something, you eat it. Will I ever be happy? You want something, I do it. Will you ever be happy? Because remember, the mind is always triggered by something. The mind is not triggered by ignorance. The sense of wanting, or the perception of me wanting something, that's because of ignorance. But the actual sight, the actual sound, the actual taste, touch, and the perception of all of this is triggered by something. Something meaning sight, smell, taste, touch, and whatnot. When the stimuli has entered the mind, that's what triggers the mind itself. So your very mind is never what? Satisfied. Can it? Will you ever be happy that I had pizza? Will I be ever happy if you had, say, chocolate? If I want chocolate? I can never be satisfied. Let's logically think about this, right? If this happened like that, right, the mind arose, and then it can perceive. If it happened like that, then every mind we can be satisfied, can't we? Because then I want pizza, I eat pizza, I'm happy. I want pizza, I eat pizza, and then I'm happy. Then we're satisfied. Then we can say, well, I have received what I wanted. But now? Now can I receive what I want? Because I can only go looking after, I can go running after it, but it'll always be the next mind that takes it. It can only be perceived by what? The next mind. Then when can your mind be satisfied? Then you can argue and say, but then, so I was like, then why do we feel pleasure then? Because if this mind wants the pizza, and this mind is the one that eats the pizza, then how can I feel pleasure here if only after the mind arises do I want the pizza? Then how can I feel pleasure? Then why do I feel pleasure? Due to what? Due to? What does ignorance do? Remember, we have the PP and the IP. This process is what? The perception process, the perceiving process. But under this, what happens? We have the ignorance-based process here. And so what happens is, it comes up and says, well, this is jati happens. At the time when it wants pizza, it thinks I want pizza. Then when it happens here and it says I've just eaten pizza, I want pizza. What happens is it starts to connect and says, I had wanted pizza for the last 3 minds. I received what I got. And due to our, let's call it craziness, due to our craziness, we think, I've wanted pizza. I ate pizza. Then, like the pigeon, connects the dots and says, I see, I just ate pizza, so I should be happy. And it starts to clap and say, yay, I got my pizza. I am what? Happy. But mind arises, mind passes away. Next mind. Now what? It wants pizza. No, next we'll say, next it sees something. It comes up with the sight mind, the sight chitta. And then it arises. And now it comes up and says, I want pizza again. And then jati is what says that I want pizza. Next mind eats. And says, yay, I've eaten pizza. But really what happened? The mind perceives. So really, if you think about this, when your mind is constantly what? Constantly burning. Why? Because it can never receive what it gets. If that is so, why do we constantly go after things that give us pleasure? If our mind can never take what it wants, why do we seek pleasure? Thanks to our what? Insanity. Because we can't handle the pressure build-up. We can't handle the pressure. Therefore, we come to the idea that, you know, I've eaten pizza. And we start clapping and say, yay, I ate pizza. We know that it's easier to apply to who? to others than ourselves, right? It's always easier to apply to others, because why? It's their jati, not my jati, right? My jati is special. Their jati isn't so special. Yeah? So I want you to look at this in other people first. So you can get the hang of it before applying to yourself. So look at the people around you. So you'll see people, they will fight for what they want. They will say, you know what, give me my car back, I will get, you'll never see the end of this, and da 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 da. They'll fight for what they want, but their mind will never receive it. They'll do whatever they can to get what they want, but their mind will never receive it. Look at the useless, look at the futileness of this. That no matter what they do, they will never receive what they want. You see, if you truly understand that, now you don't need to go out your way in search of things that bring you happiness. Once you understand that, now you don't have this idea that I need this to be happy. Instead, you realize what? It's jati that I need to get rid of. Let's destroy the house. Let's destroy the house of jati. Now, whenever you feel pleasure, what do you instantly should realize? This pleasure isn't the mind. This mind isn't feeling true pleasure. Why? Because the mind isn't getting what it wants. Instead, what? It is feeling. Thanks to its insanity, it feels that I've got what I want, and I can relieve my pressure now. Because remember, where does jati come from? Before, okay. So ignorance and attachment gives rise to vexation. Right? Vexation gives what? When the vexation comes to a limit, what happens? We have abhisankara or insanity mode. It triggers the insanity mode. Because now every mind is what? Ends off with what? Please, I want. But never can get. See how hopeless the mind is? Not helpless. It's not helpless. It's hopeless. Because never can the mind ever in its entire existence. Think about it. How many minds do you think you've had throughout your entire samsara? I don't think there's a number that you can give for that. The closest number I can think of is infinity, but that's not a number, is it? Infinite number of thoughts have gone by, and not a single one of them have received what they want. And yet people don't realize this. So what do they say? You know, Buddha, grow up to become a doctor. Become a doctor, become an engineer, become a lawyer, and then you'll be happy. But every mind after this child becomes a lawyer is never satisfied. See, that's why the Buddha comes into this world and says, don't go looking for happiness. Don't go looking, ego. Don't go searching for pleasure. Instead, destroy the house of what? Jati. How do you destroy the house of jati? How do you destroy the house of jati? By understanding. Understanding and applying. You see, the beauty of this is, when you realize what is happening, it disappears. when you realize it's jati at play, when you truly understand it's jati at play, jati disappears. Well, when I say disappears, in the mind, it's not disappears, it's suppressed. But the building blocks of ignorance decreases. The building blocks of attachment decreases. Therefore, jati in the next mind, the level of jati in the next mind decreases. See, all we have to do is continue to see what is actually happening. What is happening at this moment? Because we have to always come back to why. Why are we doing this? Because of jati. Jati is the criminal here. Jati, or in other words, dukkha. Dukkha is the criminal here. Always point back to the criminal. Why are we doing this? To get rid of who? The criminal. It's almost like a detective looking at a crime scene, looking for the who? The criminal. So you know detectives, right? And they come to crime scenes, they look at the blood splatter, they look at the evidence placed behind, and then they come to the idea that this is who the criminal should be, go look for the criminal. Yeah, we've all read Sherlock Holmes, right? And that's what we should be doing as well. Okay, we're suffering. Look for why we're suffering. Look for why we're angry. Look for why we feel desire. Look for why we're never satisfied. And look for the criminal. Who's the criminal? Jati. When you realize it's jati at play, what else do you realize? That this, it's not that I received what I wanted. Instead, it's a process here. Now, this is not me telling you that, okay, you know, make jati your enemy. Because jati should be your enemy. But remember, jati is also what? A process. Jati is also what? It's perfect. Like, I remember when Guru Hamaru and then Amaras and Hamaru, they said, you know what, you know, jati is perfect. Like, how can it be perfect? Because why? We are trying every single day to get rid of ignorance and attachment, to get rid of jati. Because jati is what? Not perfect. But jati itself is what? Perfect. Suffering itself is what? Is what? Perfect. But it's perfect for what? In what sense? It's perfect because of what? It's cause and effect. See how great it is that jati is cause and effect. If jati wasn't cause and effect, well, basically, what's the point of us being here? Because jati is cause and effect, we're able to get rid of it. So what's the cause of jati? Abhisankara. What's the cause of abhisankara? Or the insanity mode. What's the cause of this insanity mode? Vexation. What's the cause of vexation? Attachment. What's the cause of attachment? Ignorance. And what is ignorance then? It's not knowing what's happening. So you going back and understanding what's happening is its own medicine. So it's understanding that gets rid of the understanding. Or it's the understanding that reinforces the understanding. So the more you run through this, the more what? You get rid of ignorance itself. Then the more you further in your path, you accelerate the path, or you go further on this path to do what? To attain Nibbana. See, this is why the Dhamma is so beautiful. It's perfect in the beginning, middle and end. Because no matter where you start, where is the end? The end is so clear. The beginning is so clear. The middle is always so clear. Because once you understand what's happening, what happens? Ignorance itself decreases. And when ignorance decreases, now what? Jati decreases. It's a positive feedback loop. Or no, it's a negative feedback loop. Because it's reducing, right? The more you do, the less you get. Then the less you need to do. And then you come to zero. But if you don't, what happens? Now the pigeon happens. You made the connection that this is what makes me happy. I need this to be happy. And therefore, searching and searching and searching and searching. And when you receive, you flap your wings. Hey, I've made the connection. I found it. What? Jati has helped me found what? Pleasure. Except you don't realize that. You realize what? Eating this, doing that, makes me feel what? Pleasure. See, these are two completely different processes. Except when this releases pressure, it makes a connection. Just like that timer. Whenever the timer hits 20 seconds, the box opens and the pigeon thinks that, you know, it's because of this that happens. Same thing with our mind. See, you have to understand what is truly happening. Because when you understand, then suffering goes out the door. It's all because of understanding. All you have to do is understand. Okay, where do you have to go to understand? Where do you have to be to understand? Who do you have to meet to understand? The basic fundamental understanding can only be given unless you're the Buddha, which if you are, then you shouldn't be here. The initial understanding has to be given by someone who understands. When someone understands, they are able to show to you the processes. Where is the start? What is happening? And they show you what ignorance truly is. What is happening? Once you have the basic fundamental, now you don't need to be anywhere. You don't need to be any, so you don't need to do anything except what? Practice. But what is noble association then? Because if all you have to do is understand, what's the point of us being in noble association? What's the point? Because all you have to do is understand, right? Okay, everyone, just understand, right? I will end it here, okay? And just understand what ignorance is, understand what's happening, and everything will be okay. Then what's the point of noble association? Noble association is key. Because without noble association, your mind is like a wild stray dog. Yes, the dog knows I have to eat, I have to do this, I have to do that, but instead it's running around doing whatever it has to do, running Lulu around the place. But what does noble association do? It kind of takes the dog, puts a leash on the dog, and brings the dog in. It says, okay, these are your boundaries. Don't do these sort of things. Don't do things that will harm you. Don't do things that's going to harm other people. Think about these things. Think about this thing. Think about that thing. Think about all of these things and practice. You see, we have to make, because noble association are like two fences on both sides. Yes, you have the freedom of walking to this way and that way. But what does noble association do is give you these two barriers. So in your life, if there are places without barriers, understand that you're not safe. If there is a place in your life where you don't have noble association, there's no one to check or to help you out when you need to, know that it's dangerous. Because you could just slip out. When you slip out, now the journey increases. The journey will further increase. it will become harder and harder. Because why? Every time... A good example would be this. Have you ever tried to make a castle of cards? Have you? I've never had, back then, I've never had the patience. Did 1, 2, 3, 4, put the top one, falls over, try it once, twice, gave up. But, you see, the practice is also like this. You have to have the patience as well. It's like you're trying to make this castle of cards. Without noble association, it's like having all these windows open. It's like having all these windows and doors open and people running here and there through this place. Now try to make a castle of cards. Is it going to be easy? Without closing the windows, without calming everyone down, you can still make the castle of cards, right? Technically, you can still make the castle of cards, but is it going to be easy? Is it going to be easy? It's going to be very difficult. Because you think about it, right? The more you build these castles of cards, the more it falls down. What happens to the person who's doing it? And now you are less, likely to do it again. That's why lots of people have this idea that, Nibbana, not for this life. Because why? They try and they try and they try and they try. But in the end, every time they do, the castle of cards falls down. And then it becomes harder and harder and harder and harder. But with noble association, with the people around you, by putting self barriers as well, you are closing these windows. So this is why the Buddha has also put the Vinaya. This is something that we rarely talk about, because it's not something that needs to be talked about. The Buddha has Dhamma and then Vinaya. Vinaya means the discipline. You can say, what does the discipline and the Dhamma have anything to do in common? They say you can't do this, you say you can't do that. Why does that have to do with the Dhamma? You don't need the Vinaya for anything to happen, right? Actually, you need the Vinaya. Now you can say, yes, it's the Dhamma Vinaya, the Raga Vinaya, Desha Vinaya, Moha Vinaya. But more than that, it's the protection. It's these gates, these fences that are put alongside you. That you know that this is what I'm supposed to do, and this is what I'm not supposed to do. Some of these gates will be electrified. For example, there'll be things that you know that your teachers will say that if you do, you think, let's say, you will be kicked out. Now, you know, every time you come close to it, you can feel, you can hear the hum. You can feel the electricity, and therefore you know to stay away. Simply put, so there'll be fences that are electrified. So there'll be rules that in your lives that they have been placed that if you do this sort of thing, you have terrible consequences. For example, as a monk, right, as a higher monk, we have 4 rules, right? If we are to break these rules, we are no longer allowed in the association of the Mahasangha. So basically, we have to leave. That is an electrified fence. So it's almost like a fence with another fence around, which is electrified. So if you jump over one fence, there's another fence that you know is electric. And so you can hear the hum. So you know when you do something, you can feel the hum, and therefore you stay away. Because if you break it, what happens? Now the castle of cards are falling and falling and falling and falling. Now it becomes harder and harder and harder and harder. Because this was a question that I've always had, right? Is that, you know, that the, like, the, we have the Vinaya, like, in the, in, we have the Dhamma, then we have the Vinaya. Why the Vinaya? Like, why did the Buddha put so many Vinayas? So much disciplines. For two reasons. One was for the upkeep of the sasana, so it can last for a long time. Second one is so we don't blow these cards down. Because the more we blow, the harder it becomes. The journey becomes harder and harder and harder and harder. Until the point that comes that you yourself believe that I've tried, failed, doesn't happen. So give yourself some discipline. Discipline yourself. Give yourself self-discipline. Self-discipline. Discipline the self. So give yourself these disciplines. Give yourself these noble association. Give yourself these walls, these fences. For example, if you know that there are certain areas that, for example, let's say you're in the Valley Malur, and let's say you have the tendency to fall asleep. Can happen to anyone, right? Go ask someone, right? Because you're surrounded by noble association. If you ever see me asleep, if you see me falling, or if you have the feeling that I'm falling asleep, please, out of great compassion, be my fence and give me a tap. Now, living in the monastery, you see lots of sights, right? Especially in the Valley Model, right? There are some people that once you tap, they go, "Oh, thank you very much." There are some people, right, that when you tap, they go, "I wasn't asleep. It's me. I'm just meditating. It's just my head falls down when I meditate. It's just part of me." You see, you have to think in the eyes of the other person. And let's say you're someone who does that, like you're meditating and your head falls down and someone taps you and says, and you say, "I wasn't sleeping, I was meditating, right? I'm still meditating." You could be still meditating. But think of the other mind. What do they think? They don't want to be woken up. So? No. And out of great compassion, because they may think that when I try to wake them up, that they become angry. That's going to hinder their path. So I'm not going to wake them up. So it's not out of like selfishness, but out of compassion maybe. Right? So again, build this fence around us. Create this protection around us. So for example, let's say you are when you do merit activities, say you have the job of sweeping, right? Have someone there to be your fence. So if you do something wrong, to just tap and say, "I think you're doing something wrong here." Simply have them tap you and ask, like, "What are you contemplating on?" I know how stressful that may be. Because you're actually contemplating, right? And someone taps you and goes like, "What are you contemplating on?" That's breaking your concentration, right? So you have the liberty, or you have the rights to be angry, right? Right? Because what they're doing is you've asked them to make a fence. So in case you weren't contemplating, now look at what they've done for you. I remember I used to be really annoyed when someone asked me, like, did you contemplate today? Because I thought, okay, that means this person thinks that I don't contemplate. I'm like, okay, no, are you silly? Look, I contemplate, I'm contemplating. And I got really, like, really annoyed. But then I realized, well, what's wrong with that? Why should I care what they think? What they're giving me is a treasure. Aren't they? They're giving me gold. Because why? They're saying that, are you contemplating? Reminding you to do what? See, we have this idea that I have to be the best. I have to be good amongst everyone. Right? I have to have a good image in front of all these people. And so when someone says something that you think tarnish your image, you go, oh, no, I don't do anything like that. I've never done anything like that in my life. But who cares? So for example, let's say a group of people, or say you're having a conversation with others, and they start talking about this, start talking about unnecessary things. You can go and say, like, I don't think what we're talking about is right. Some of them may start being like, going like, are you practicing your path now? And start like cajoling you and making fun of it. But who cares? Because whose Nibbana are we talking about? And you're helping them as well. You see, it shouldn't matter. It really shouldn't matter. So make this fence around you. Get everything around you to do. So whenever you're doing something, have this fence. If you can get a fence from the moment you wake up to the moment you sleep, understand your journey to Nibbana will be faster by 100-folds. Because why? There's always someone there to show you if you're making a mistake. Show you that, okay, there's something, what are you doing now? Something that we were told to do long ago, which only now I remember, is have someone remind you every so often. Now, even if it's a timer, right? Have a timer reminding you every 15 minutes maybe, Am I on the right path? So because sometimes when you're, like, say, in the Valley Model contemplating or doing something, sometimes we are not aware. We're not mindfully aware. We go everywhere. We make stories and we are on different worlds. We need something to bring us back. So simply a 15 minutes timer is enough. So we need these two fences around us. We need these strong fences around us. The stronger the fence, the faster your journey. That's why noble association is key. Now, remember, noble association isn't the place, nor the people. You can live in a jungle filled with lions, but you can be the only cow. Right? No matter how, it doesn't matter where you are, it doesn't matter who you're with. It matters how much of it do you take to your advantage. So just because you live in the monastery doesn't mean you are going to attain Nibbana. No one's given you that guarantee, have they? When you came to the monastery, did Guru Hamra sign and say, you are guaranteed, right, before you end your life to attain Nibbana? I don't know, if you guys have, please tell me, I want to sign this as well. But he doesn't sign that. Because you can't guarantee. Because you can live amongst angels, but still be the devil. Just like Lucifer is a devil. But he's an angel. You can live amongst angels but still be the devil. So use what you have. Use the people around you. Use everything you possibly can for your salvation. For your salvation, for your nibbana, for your happiness. That is your own, that's the responsibility for yourself. I can't do that for you. Something that Guru Hanru and my teachers always tell me, right? And it's something that I live by. You can take the horse, your horses to the watering hole. So they say that I can take my horses to the watering hole, but I can't make my horses drink. I can never make my horses drink. That's your responsibility. That's entirely your responsibility. Whether you drink or not, but your teachers and your noble association will always, always try to bring you to who? To where? To where? The watering hole. Right. So as your task for this week, right? See, I'm going to give you more tasks, don't worry. It's only going to get worse from here. As your task for this week, you all have three things written down, and hopefully you now have a trigger. Right? Trigger, something to trigger these three things. Right? These three improvements to further make ourselves better. Every time you do one of these, I want you to tick. Put a tick next to that. Every time. So if you do it three times a day, you have three ticks. And I want to see how many ticks you have by the end of this week. See, I can take my horses to where? The watering hole. But I'm making sure they drink. And also, I have another suggestion that I'd like to make. If any of you have any questions, right? If you want, you can write them down and leave them on this table before the sermon. It could be questions about things, say, how to practice the path. It can be questions on certain talks that you've heard, and any sort of questions. And I'll try to answer what I can. Now, I can't give you the perfect answer, because I'm not the perfect one. And if I can't answer it, I will 100% make sure I go to my teachers and ask. If they can't answer it, I'll make sure I go to their teachers. And they can't answer it, I'll make sure I go to even Guru Hamdur so I get the answer. And if I think that if I can't give the perfect answer, I'll bring whoever I can to give you the perfect answer. Because that's my responsibility, right? So it's your chance to ask any questions. Alright. So I'm aware of the time, and we have to conclude. So today we talked about lots of things. Right? It'll always be that we talk about lots of things, and most of these things will be practical. Because you all have a certain understanding. But we need to put into practice for it to have an effect. It doesn't matter how much theory we know. It's how much we put into practice that makes a difference. Does it make sense? Okay. Let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's chant for the merits of Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down through the generational noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief leaders of chapters, who dedicate their life to the noble path and commit themselves to betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's all take one chance of merits to Guru San Nansi, as well as all of our teachers, all the monks, all of the Anagarikas and Nagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer our merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transliterating sermons, sharing the matter with others, inviting us to join them. May the power of merits. If any of them be born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monasteries, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, medicines, as well as those who pass and know how to extend their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer our merits to our mothers, fathers, uncles, aunts, mothers and fathers, children, sons and daughters, friends and acquaintances, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they prosper, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from their meritorious deeds, fulfill their meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And so take a moment to transfer our merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakradeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Samudra the Sasana. As well, take one transfer merits to all of our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits remain the prosper and divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. As well, take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who bring friends and family to us in this long journey to samsara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces, as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost lives in war be their friend or foe rejoice in the merits acquired today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits. As well, take a moment to transfer merits to all those lost in life, natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them, we those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey samsara. May the power of these merits, if anything be born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves being born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the empowering blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day. We have been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nuances, Arhat Main Nuances, in this very land itself. And finally, may the power of all the merits required for the other day, you and I, and everyone who made this program a success, become an Arhat Nuance, or an Arhat Main Nuance, in this very life, in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Mahasangha be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midetnva, dvesha ginnen midetnva, moha ginnen midetnva, nibbana parama sukhayin, sukita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva. Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva. Nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva. Raga gini niveva, dvesha gini niveva, moha gini niveva, nivansapa labeva. සැප ලැබේවා. නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා. තුනුරුවන්ගේ සුවිසිය අනන්ත මහාගුණ බලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සිල් සත්‍යෝම නිබ්බාන පමසකින් සුගතර විත්වා.